You're listening to a Dwell Community Church production. If you'd like to check out more resources, visit dwellcc.org.
All right. Well, good morning. It's good to be here with you guys this morning. Like Sherry said, my name is Hallie Clark. And yeah, I was asked to put together a presentation on this topic of talking with kids about difficult topics. So like she said, I'm a school counselor. So I have lots of conversations with kids. It's just the nature of my job. And, you know, I have fun conversations. I have more challenging conversations. And I really love it. I love getting to talk with kids because really their brains are in like a perpetual state of learning. So I think it's very fun to get to engage with kids in that space. You know, whether they're let on or not, they are learning all the time. They're taking in the world, right? They're trying to figure out, you know, putting two and two together, who they are, their place in the world and everything. And, you know, to have the opportunity as adults to engage with them and talk about these things that are on their mind, you know, the questions that come up, the topics of concern and everything, we have a great opportunity in helping to build kids up and preparing for the world that they're a part of. So, if you're here this morning, it's probably because you're an adult who recognizes that sometimes difficult conversations are necessary, and it can be kind of scary to wade into that with kids. So I'm hoping that as we talk about this together, that you'll feel more prepared and equipped to confidently engage with kids on topics that, you know, we might naturally feel more hesitant or concerned about, you know, getting into. So let's go ahead and get started. All right, so what kind of difficult things might we find ourselves talking about with kids? The three that I was kind of asked to specifically consider and talk about this morning are like grief, suffering, and injustice. So these are things that they will encounter in the world. And it's hard to talk about these things because sometimes just the answers are tough, right? Like they're kind of complex. Sometimes we're uncertain about how to go about talking about them. But I'm sure, you know, those aren't the only topics on your minds as you're sitting here this morning. There's lots of challenging conversations to have with kids, like, you know, personal safety, preparing them and equipping them against, like, sexual abuse. The talk and sexuality, family changes come up, you know, whether that's separation, divorce, remarriage. There can be mental health issues, other health issues. All these things can be challenging to figure out how do we engage kids on. So, like I said, my hope for this morning is that as a result of talking together and kind of supporting each other in this, you will feel more free and directional in moving into these kind of conversations. Okay, so what that'll look like this morning is first we're going to consider what makes these conversations difficult. What are some of the barriers that come up that kind of have that, that create that block in us to move forward with the conversations? We'll look at some principles that we can lean on, some solid things to come back to when, you know, you need something solid to hold on to. And then some conversation tips. So some of those things come from the field of counseling. There are some kind of conversation tools that help communicate, you know, active listening to students, clarification, and helping them to know that you are engaged in a dialogue and conversation to hopefully open that up for better conversations. So let's go ahead and get into it. Okay, so the top three barriers that I thought we could discuss this morning to having these difficult conversations. One is that maybe we know the answers to the questions that might be coming up, but we just don't know how to communicate them in a developmentally appropriate way. How do you talk to a 3-year-old versus a 12-year-old versus a 17-year-old? Those just look different. How much can a 4-year-old understand? How much is too much? How much is too little? Sometimes it's just challenging to think about that aspect of talking to kids about complex topics. Another one is that maybe we just don't know the answers ourselves, which is intimidating as the adult who's supposed to know everything for your kids. Or maybe it's something where we're just personally struggling to understand the issue ourselves. Maybe we're right in the middle of it, and that makes it hard to talk about it with kids because we're struggling personally. And the last one is, I think, you know, tagging on to these other two barriers is sometimes what we're affected by is the work of shame in our own lives that kind of creates this extra barrier, and it's emotional, it's deeper, it's harder to perceive, but can be at play. So this third point is a little bit, it's a newer concept that I've literally just started thinking about in the last like week and a half or so. So it's a little hot off the presses about what I've been reading recently. So bear with me as I'm trying to communicate what I'm starting to understand about this topic, but I found it very relevant as I was putting this presentation together and reading that content on shame. And I was like, wow, I just don't think I've had this on my radar before, and I think this is a really helpful tool to be able to notice. So we'll get into that when we get there. We'll start with the other two first. Okay, let's talk about communicating ideas in a way that kids understand. All right, well, I think one thing that's helpful in considering these conversations is that you don't have to explain every nuance in one conversation. If we put ourselves up to that task, that's going to feel really intimidating, and it can kind of bog us down. I think a really great way to start, actually, I mean, I can't really tell you how much your 4-year-old versus your 11-year-old versus your 16-year-old knows, because I don't know them, and it kind of just depends on what they've been around, experience, what their friends are talking about. The best thing you can do as a parent, I think, is find out what they already know, asking questions. That actually creates better dialogue anyway to find out what they already know, because you're not assuming that they know nothing, because kids don't really like that when you assume they don't know anything. But you can just find out from them. Another thing is, you know, if you're thinking about a topic, we can think, you know, we can get caught up in all the nuances, but one thing that might be helpful is if you can, for yourself, identify what is the most important thing that I want them to know about this topic. Focus there, start there, and then let the conversation kind of expand from there as needed. So, for example, if we're talking about the topic of, like, grief, a question that might come up, especially with younger kids, might be like, why did he or she die? And there's some, you know, simple kind of answers that we can give them to kind of latch onto something, like, well, his brain was very sick. Or, you know, her body was very old and it stopped working. You know, that's simple and a place to start, and there are going to be a lot of questions that come from there, right? But you kind of give them something to start with to understand. They process that, and maybe some other questions come up. Some of those questions can be tough and hard to answer, like, well, will that ever happen to you? Which breaks your heart to hear them, you know, ask that question. And, you know, a simple response to something like that could be, well, everyone's body eventually stops working and they die. Most people live a long time before that happens. So being able to give them, you know, simple answers to kind of take in for wherever they're at the time can be a good place to start. And again, like, we don't know, more questions might come up after that point. That one's a hard one. I mean, writing that out is like, oh, it breaks my heart to say that because, you know, we don't know for certain. We don't know exactly what we can tell them, which is what brings me to my next point is in talking about these difficult topics, the best thing we can do at that point is communicate the hope that we have in those difficult circumstances. Because the answers to many of these questions are not ideal, right? That's hard to say that, like, and there is uncertainty because we don't know the future or what specific challenges kids will face in their lives. And knowing that, there are still solid things that we can give them that will help them kind of, I guess, to move forward and like build their framework about how they think about these topics. Okay, so when it comes to grief and death, you know, you can't promise your child that you won't die unexpectedly. It's just not a promise that we can make to our kids. You can't promise them that they won't get sick or have a severe illness. Yeah, but you can pass on the hope that you have. And we have some really solid hope that we can pass on to kids that will give them, you know, confidence and the security that they need. If you are someone who has placed your faith in Jesus Christ and his promises and God's promises, then you have solid footing to stand on. And so I want to share some things from the Bible, from Scripture, that speaks to these difficult topics that are hard to answer, that God has a really solid answer to. So when it comes to death, in Isaiah 25, verse 8, it says, "He will swallow up death forever. The sovereign Lord will wipe away the tears from all faces. The Lord has spoken." Like, that's powerful. Like, God says that about the topic of death. In Revelation 21, John gets this vision of the future in heaven and what God has promised that he was going to do. And this is what John reports. He said, "And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, 'Look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. They will be his people, and God himself will be with them and be their God. He will wipe away every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death or mourning or crying or pain, for the old order of things has passed away. He who was seated on the throne said, I am making everything new. Then he said, write this down, for these words are trustworthy and true. So as you're talking about these topics of death, it is scary to consider and think about, but when God has a solid answer to that, that is what you can pass on to your kids and be like, you know, we don't know the answer to some of these specific things, how they'll work out in our lives. But this is what God has promised us if we've put our faith in him, and we can know that for certain when we can't know some of the other things. Even Jesus had some interesting things to say of his own death when he was kind of preparing his followers for the fact that he would be leaving them. I think this is just a cool detail that Jesus gives to us. He said, my Father's house has many rooms. If that were not true, or if that were not so, would I have told you that I'm going there to prepare a place for you? I think what's really cool is on top of getting to tell kids that they have that God has an answer to death, that's not something that we'll experience for the full duration of our existence, that there will be a time when he does away with death. Not only that, but when we get to think about heaven, Jesus himself said he's preparing an incredible place for people to go where he's going to be with them, and we have that to look forward to. Okay, so how about the topic of injustice? Jesus makes a very bold claim when he stands up in a synagogue during his lifetime. And he stands up, he's reading from a scripture, like an Old Testament scripture, but he's referring to himself when he declares it. Like he makes it really clear that he's talking about himself. And so what he says is, he says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has appointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and the recovery of sight for the blind, to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor. So Jesus has declared himself as someone who is going to bring to end suffering and injustice and wrongs that are done between people. And he, you know, confidently declares that that is something that, you know, his mission on earth was the start of that. And then it's going to be completed, works in people's lives today and to the point where he comes back and makes everything new. So that's something that we can give to kids when, you know, the topic of injustice comes up. All right, let's talk about suffering. Jesus said, I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. In this world you will have trouble, but take heart, I have overcome the world. What an important realization from Jesus that he acknowledges there will be trouble in this world. This is true of people who don't know Jesus personally, people who've been following him their whole lives, people who've just put their faith in him. There is just trouble in this world. The Bible makes it very clear that the world is broken. It's not the way that things should be. And God does have a solution to that. And he's in the process of that. And what he wants us to know in the meantime, as we're enduring these things, that though there is trouble and suffering, he's there with us, and he has overcome it ultimately, and we can lean on that. All right, here's another one from 2 Corinthians chapter 4. Paul writes, therefore, we do not lose heart. Though outwardly we are wasting away, yet inwardly we are being renewed day by day. For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all. So we fix our eyes not on what is seen, but what is unseen, since what is seen is temporary, but what is unseen is eternal. This is a pretty big statement from Paul, because if you know anything about Paul's life, the Apostle Paul, no one would describe his sufferings that he endured for the sake of communicating the truth about Jesus to other people as light or momentary troubles. Like, dude was shipwrecked, he was beaten, he was stoned, like every bad thing that could have a person just like got targeted on him. And he's like, man, compared to what is coming, these are light and momentary troubles. And he had that kind of faith and perspective that really helped him continue to move forward in tough things, but not being weighed down by them. And that's the kind of hope that we can pass on to, you know, our kids too, is that, you know, this stuff is hard now, but being connected to Jesus and having, you know, help from God as we're working on it actually puts really different perspective on it. Okay. Oh, so other concerns can come up also, right? And so I don't have a verse for every single possible issue that might come up. But there are a couple verses that I really like that I think applies to most difficult things that we face. In John 10:10, Jesus says, I have come that they may have life and have it to the full. I just think that's such a good reminder from Scripture about, you know, what Jesus wants for us is to have, you know, happy, full, contentful lives, and no matter what kind of is thrown our way in this life, that if we're leaning on him, he's like, I want to give that to you, life and life to the full, both in this life and after this life into eternity. Jeremiah 29:11 is another great memory verse for kids too, as you're talking about, you know, walking through hard things. This is what Jesus, or what God said of his people in Jeremiah 29. It says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future." That really is God's heart toward his people, that he has good things in store. And so we can cling to that when the things that we're experiencing in the moment right now don't feel that way. He's like, I am with you in this, and this is what we're working toward. Yeah, so the value of hope in difficult conversations is that, like I said, a lot of the answers to some of the questions kids bring up, they're hard answers and they're not ideal, and some of them aren't very certain, but there are some things that we can be certain about that God has given us that is really powerful for giving kids at least something to stand on in hope. And that's very powerful. It's much better than having just leave it at like, well, we don't know. Good luck out there, kid. God has given us something so much better than that. All right, so let's talk about the next potential barrier to having these conversations with kids. When we are struggling with the issue ourselves, like in the case of grief, a lot of times grief is hard to talk about with kids because it's not just their grief, it's your grief also. And so figuring out how to handle your own feelings and emotions while also talking to your kid can be really challenging. Or maybe you yourself just are personally struggling with not knowing the answers to the questions, and so not knowing what hope you can give them or what answers you can give them that are helpful. And so my recommendation for that is to first start with a gracious attitude toward yourself. It's very understandable and reasonable that you don't know everything in the entire world, and that you can be affected by things too, even as the adult. Having that attitude toward yourself and giving yourself, like, you know, grace and understanding can be really helpful, because that'll change your demeanor about when you, you know, talk to your kids. Along with that, it can be really, really valuable and helpful to make sure that you're getting your own support, that there are really good resources out there to help as you're, you know, working through your own experience of grief or suffering or, you know, whatever the situation is, there are really great resources out there. And what I love about coming together in a big group like this is, you know, in community, if we can share with each other the great resources that we're leaning on, I think that can be really helpful. So, we've got some resources available here. Some of them I have listed on this tip sheet, like toward the back, somewhere in the back of this presentation. And John Montgomery gave us a good handout for helping children in grief. And so reaching out and finding where the good resources are can be really helpful for you as you're walking through this part. And now, as far as actually talking with your kid about things when you aren't sure, it's okay to acknowledge that you don't know the answers. And when we do that, the best thing is if we're able to lean back on the hope that we have again in those situations, that is still a good answer for kids. And if you're wondering what scriptures could be helpful for that, you might connect with the Psalms personally, and also something you can give to the kids. The psalmist, especially like David, he found himself in really, really difficult circumstances. And if you read through those psalms, it usually starts off with something very raw and just like he is feeling discouraged, frustrated, confused, sometimes with God himself. And he isn't afraid to express that part. And what he always does too is he comes back, so he might express all those raw feelings and experiences, and then he reminds himself by writing it down, the hope that he has and like who God is. You know, he'll turn around and say, you know, but God, you are the one who did this and that and that, so I'm gonna put my trust in you. And I think that's a really good model for us for what we can do when we aren't sure or confused by what we're experiencing. And you can model that for your kids too. I think that's really good for kids to see that even if I don't know the answers, that I know how to handle it in a way that brings me back to what's true. And then, yeah, I guess along with all these things is the idea that, you know, giving yourself some space and time to learn about the issues yourself can just be really helpful. You're allowed to be a learner also. In fact, we should be lifelong learners. So the more we can learn about these things over time will benefit both you and your kids as you're working through stuff. Okay, so that brings us to talking about this concept, which I think is really helpful because I think it kind of undergirds some of these other hesitancies that I just talked about. Either, you know, maybe we feel nervous about not knowing how to respond or make things understandable to kids, or, you know, we don't know the answers ourselves. Sometimes what undergirds that and kind of like elevates the power of those as actually being barriers is the work of shame in our lives. Okay, so what do I mean by that? What is shame? Sometimes we might have classically thought of shame as just another one of the emotions on the emotion wheel or something like that. But as I was reading from Kurt Thompson's book, The Soul of Shame, he identifies some things about shame that are different than like other just like kind of regular emotions or something. And I guess my summary of what I'm learning about it is that really we can recognize shame as a covertly operating force that kind of lingers just below our conscious awareness, and it prevents us from meaningfully connecting with other people. And that can be true of our children also and our friends who are close to us. At its core, shame involves feelings of fear, threat, insecurity, and accusation. It's interesting that it kind of starts there. Sometimes we experience, well, we really do experience shame as more of like a gut feeling, anxiety, and then from there, some of the like beliefs or ideas come up, they like rise up out of that like kind of more emotional, deeper experience. It produces thoughts that follow those same lines of fear, threat, insecurity, accusation. Shame says, I don't have what it takes. I am insufficient. I am a failure. And it's kind of like a core belief that shame tries to write its story or narrative into your life and how you perceive yourself. So there's a difference between guilt and shame. Guilt is a sense that I have done something wrong. Shame is a sense that I am wrong at the core of who I am. And that has a really powerful effect on the way we perceive ourselves and kind of our narrative about, you know, who we are and, you know, what we're capable of. So here's a quote from that book that I mentioned, The Soul of Shame by Kurt Thompson. He says, shame is not simply an unfortunate, random, emotional event that came with us out of the primordial evolutionary soup. It is both a source and result of evil's active assault on God's creation, and a way for evil to try to hold out until the new heaven and earth appear at the consummation of history. Okay, so what he's saying about this is that there's a force behind shame that actually has kind of an intent, like a volition to rewrite your story and who you are. And that evil force behind shame can keep us paralyzed. If that is what's running in the back of our minds as we're trying to move toward kids and having these conversations, you can see how that would discourage you really quickly and keep you from having important conversations. You know, conversations that illuminate the truth and bring people out of darkness and create connection. Instead of that, it squashes all of those things. Because God has an enemy who doesn't want that to happen, and he can use shame really powerfully in our lives to paralyze us that way. Okay, so, you know, as you can imagine, when we experience shame, we feel the need to hide, to withdraw, and to protect ourselves, which are not great for conversation. You know, these difficult topics can carry a sense of fear and threat and insecurity. You know, we worry about, you know, what the kids are really thinking about. What if I can't answer well? What if this pushes us further away or something? All of the different ideas that can, you know, well up inside of us. You know, if we were to actually engage on a topic. I think the adult feels it when, like, you know, a child brings up a difficult topic, or maybe you get a call from school and it brings up something tough that's going on. We get that sense of that, like, that fear and insecurity. The child might feel it when an adult broaches a difficult topic. That's why it can be hard to talk to kids sometimes, is maybe it's eliciting this sense of shame, like, I've done something wrong, there's something wrong with me, I feel bad about this conversation, so it must be bad, and, you know, the shame on their part can also be a block in conversation. And when we're aware of these things, what's really good is then we can kind of speak to it, we can redirect our thoughts and kind of combat that work of shame so that it can create instead openness and a sense of security in the relationship. So it's almost like if there was an equation, it seems to me like shame induces fear and accusation, which leads to withdrawal, which breaks down the ability to freely relate to other people. So for example, as adults, we might experience shame in the form of, if I was a better parent, then I would know how to answer this question. And so now we're hung up on the accusation more than the fact that it's like, that's okay. And we can find the answers, but we're so hung up on like, man, here's another reason why I'm a terrible parent or something like that. We might think, how could he think or do that? I raised him better than that. What will other people think when they hear that we have this issue going on? And so now the issue isn't so much about, taking care of what's going on with the kid, but now we have to worry about, our image before other people. That gets in the way of having these conversations. Or how about if I was a better parent, she wouldn't be experiencing this. And so we get so hung up on beating ourselves up for this thing happening in our family. But that's just shame. That's the narrative of shame. That's not even truth or reality, but boy, it can be really powerful. Okay, how about the child's experience of shame? This might be going on the other end. You're trying to engage your kid on these topics or conversations, and they're not having it. Maybe one of these things is going on. It might be that, it feels bad to talk about this, so it must be bad to talk about it. In Kurt Thompson's book, he talks a lot about how shame, sometimes the reason it's really hard to combat shame is there is that emotional component that's so deep that sometimes just talking back to it doesn't get rid of the feeling we have in our gut. And when it still is there, it's kind of like we perceive that to mean that something is really wrong. We just get this sense deep inside of something is still wrong, even if you can talk back to it. And so pushing through that, like those deep feelings they can't write your story of what this means exactly. That one's just hard because kids experience it too. They might have more of a feeling than a specific, you might try to draw up out of them, like what is the concern? They don't know. It's just a feeling is the problem, but it's powerful. Okay, how about a child might be thinking, if I told my mom or dad this, they would hate me. Kids think that, that's not true. You would tell them, you've probably told them 1,000 times that's not true, but they might still believe it because it's there and shame speaks powerful narratives into people's lives. If I was a better kid, then I wouldn't, or I'm so dumb that I don't know how to talk about that. And so they just, disengage, right? Or they would judge or reject me if they knew. There's a lot of things that can be going on in kids' minds, but the root of it is shame. And like I said, if we know that this is at the root of it, we can help provide some of what is needed in response to shame, because there is a more powerful opposite force. And that force is love. So when we talk about principles for overcoming shame, we have very strong tools and things to lean on to help employ love to combat shame. And all this kind of comes back to what's going on between humanity and God. One thing that's true of all humans is that we do experience shame because there is something deeply wrong with all of us, and that's our sin. That we have a problem, we have done things that are wrong. Sometimes we know that we've perpetuated bad things against other people, or our thoughts are wrong, all these kind of things. Like, part of what shame says is true. And that's why it's so scary and so convincing. Here's the thing, though, is that even though that is true, God has an answer to our shame and our wrongdoings. And his answer was in Jesus, that Jesus overcame this major problem of ours, our sin, by becoming a substitution in our place to pay for the wrongdoings that we have done between us and God. That by Jesus dying on the cross, he was able to take on our shame and nail it to the cross and say, I've paid for it. And so if you're someone who has had that experience in your life of, putting your trust in Jesus and being like, I trust that you are who you say you are, and I want you to take that from me and pay for it. He's like, he has done that and it is finished. So once we have experienced forgiveness through Jesus, here's the thing. God's enemy, who is described as the accuser in the Bible, He has nothing on us at that point. Technically, between us and God, everything that we've ever done is paid for. There's nothing that he can say that is true that would keep, you know, make a barrier between us and God. But Satan, the accuser, continues to try. He will still speak into your life these, you know, narratives of shame that, like, you know, you're so messed up. God couldn't have really actually forgiven you for that kind of stuff. And it sounds convincing, but it's not true. So we need to remember the true narrative that comes from God himself about our standing between us and him. Okay, so what's so amazing, for a person who has this solid, you know, reconciliation between us and God, to have that taken care of in our lives puts us in a really unique spot for the rest of our lives as we experience shame. Once we're secure in Jesus' love for us, you know, and the fact that we have right standing with God, we can freely relate to other people without fear. You know, Satan, the accuser, has nothing on us, and humans have nothing on us, because what God has said is true of us is more true than anything any person or any shame can tell us. So, you know, from this place, we can face the fear of failure or rejection because we are ultimately taken care of. And this is a powerful place to be able to relate out of. You know, from this place, we can extend love and forgiveness and acceptance to other people because we've experienced that ourselves in such a deep way. So, you know, being able to extend that to kids in really tough circumstances, even if they do really mess up or something like that, and you have to have a hard conversation about it, here's the thing is that you can offer what Jesus has offered to you yourself. And what's amazing, too, is that we have real hope and a response to any threat that we experience. So, you know, whether it is an unexpected death, whether it's really difficult suffering, the injustices that we face in this world, any of those things, we have a real hope that speaks to that. So I just wanted to give some examples of overcoming shame, even just from my own life and my work as a counselor. You know, I realized that this force is at work in my own experience as a counselor trying to have difficult conversations with kids. So, I experienced this as a counselor, that fear, threat, and shame when certain topics come up. You know, I have great training, great resources, great supports, and yet when I encounter, like, a concern that I need to check in about with a student, because that's my job, I experience some things that are based in shame. I tend to get that drop in my stomach. It feels like a threat of, like, ooh, this is one of those days that a big thing comes up that I'm responsible for checking in on. Like, I feel that in my stomach as a counselor, even though I've done it. This is my seventh year being a school counselor, so it comes up, you know. I still feel that feeling in my gut. It feels like a threat. And then I get those accusing thoughts, right? If I don't say the right words, this conversation will go badly. And it's because I'm not a skilled enough counselor. If I was just more skilled, this conversation would look so smooth and perfect and everything. But, yeah. Or I get this thought, I might not know what to do next, and then that'll show that I'm incompetent. You know, that's shame. That's that, like, the accusation trying to wedge a barrier between me and connecting with a student about something really important. But if I feel like it's going to be a threat, if I engage, maybe it'll show I'm incompetent. That's going to give me pause before trying to engage with a student. Or I can believe if I was a better counselor, I would have already been helping the student. I get that sometimes. It's really weird. And I think parents get that too. I should have already been on this, you know, and I get that happens to me too. I'm like, if I was just more aware, I would have already known this. We'd already been working on it. Okay. This one is the worst one. This one feels shameful to say out loud, but I'll say it. The idea that I get this thought of, there might be something going on with that kid, but if I ask them, then I'm going to be responsible for doing something about it, and I might not have what it takes to handle it. I hate that one comes up. It was actually really helpful, though, that I eventually had words to describe what it was that I was thinking and feeling, because sometimes it's just a feeling. It's a, oh my gosh, no, I don't want to talk to that kid about that or find out if something's going on. Like, and finally, eventually, that's the narrative that was in my head. And I was like, oh, well, that's a problem. That's a big problem if it's going to keep me from, you know, being available to help a student that could have something serious going on. But I can see it, how there's a narrative behind shame that it's a threat to, like, who you are and your abilities and competencies. And it needs to be combated. And even before I really understood that, I don't think I labeled it as shame before, but what I realized in myself, and I think it's the answer to shame, is that, like, if that's my belief and my thought and my experience, the only way to overcome that is with love. So I have to choose, make an active choice to choose love and lead with love as the goal rather than reducing my own discomfort. Because that's what it was before. It was like, I might be uncomfortable if I engage on this thing, but I have to decide that's not my goal. I'm not reducing my comfort. I'm moving towards someone in love. And that's a huge game changer. It's powerful too. It changes the way that I talk to kids. I think they can feel it when I'm talking to them out of love rather than fear. My demeanor changes. It's more focused on them and what they need rather than what I need. The way I choose my words is different. It's not trying to get them to say everything's okay, but it's to really engage and find out what's needed. That's a very freeing one to have, and I've found a lot of success. I've had very good conversations about difficult things with students coming from this place. The other thing too is when I know that shame is at work in my life, that's gonna help me to engage with God about it. You know, I need to pray for wisdom before having tough conversations and ask for help before talking with a student. And coming back to that principle again is that I need to lean back on the hope that I have, that God is gonna walk through this with me. There's nothing I can face in this world that God is gonna abandon me, not help me with. That really helps too. Okay, so, let's talk about what that could look like to overcome shame in parenting then. You know, some issues will elicit that drop in your stomach that compel you to not want to engage with, you know, your child. You know, either to withdraw from them or to get angry at them because it elicits these kind of fears and threats inside of you. When you have a personal relationship with God through Jesus, you can rest in that security, and relating out of that place to your child is so much different than having to prove yourself to yourself and everyone else. And from that place, you can choose love even when your feelings, or shame really, is screaming fear and threat. You can remind yourself and your child of solid hope that you have. That really is, if I have a principle to go back to, it's we have to remind ourselves of what's true, where our hope lies when we're facing difficult things. And so some examples, I mentioned that that shame-based thought or belief or narrative. If I was a better parent, then I would know how to answer this question. Okay, if you believe that, if you lean into that, that's gonna lead you to avoid talking with others about your own questions. But if you, kind of relate out of love and kind of the freedom that comes from that, you're gonna be more free to think, all right, I might not know the answer to this now, and that's okay, but I know where I can go for help. When you're not threatened that, showing that to other people isn't going to dismantle your sense of security, now you can engage with other people on it, which is really, really important and helpful. We have, we all need that. There is not an adult in here who can handle every single thing on their own. We have to remind ourselves of that too. Okay, and how about this other accusation that, I raised him better than that. What are other people gonna think when they hear that we have this issue? That belief, that threat against your, standing in the community, your people's, perception about who you are, that kind of belief is going to lead to expressing anger at the child for bringing this up, for threatening your community, your place in it and everything. Rather, if we can instead combat shame with love and our security in that, then you're going to be more free to engage out of love and seeking to understand when it's not about upholding your image or something. Being able to respond instead I love you so much and nothing could ever change that. Will you help me understand what you're thinking or feeling? We can actually seek to understand rather than to quickly fix the problem. Okay, just a couple final thoughts on shame. Shame is gonna drive us to a goal of reducing our own fear or discomfort and insisting on our desired end results. We might have something in mind that I'm only gonna be okay if this outcome happens and comes out of it. The thing is, you can't control that. You can't ultimately control all your child's choices or what they end up believing or those kind of things. We just can't control things that are other people's realm of control. But with shame and fear dismantled, then you are free to love. And that's something that you do have control over. Love is a much more powerful goal. The way that it impacts people's lives to experience love and acceptance in the face of difficult things is really powerful, and it is actually something that's in your control. You can control your expression of love and openness toward a child. Even if they don't show that back to you, your goal was still met because you're expressing love. So I think that's really helpful because when we can spin our wheels trying to achieve goals that aren't in our control, but love is something that's always in our control. All right, I wanted to end with some practical, just conversation skills from the field of counseling that tend to be helpful for creating more openness in conversations. So I'll just go through this kind of briefly so we can talk more all together. But reflection and paraphrasing are two counseling skills that are great for clarifying our understanding. They both communicate active listening and that I'm engaged here and I want to hear from you and I want to understand. So reflection is literally just reflecting the emotion that a student is communicating. You know, it sounds like, you know, you feel confused by this. You feel worried that this. You're just making statements about their emotions and they're going to feel really understood if you do that. I use this a lot in counseling. Sometimes if I don't know what to say, because I don't know what to say a lot of times, I just go back to reflecting. You can just acknowledge what they're feeling and they're like, yes, I do feel that way. And they feel connected to you because you understand that and you're not just trying to solve their problem. All of a sudden, you're just kind of with them. Paraphrasing is great too. It's kind of like using your own words to describe what you just heard them say. And you can use it to clarify, like, am I understanding you correctly? It sounds like you're wondering how this event will affect your friend who you really care about. Maybe they didn't say those words exactly, but for you to like say it back to them, they're like, yes, that is what's bothering me so much about this thing that happened in the world. Some other counseling tools are using empathy. So empathy is the ability to understand other people's feelings and thoughts. So you can do that by putting yourself in your child's shoes. You know, imagine being 6 years old and thinking about this issue. You know, how would you be feeling if you were like six? How would you want an adult to talk about it with you? If we can kind of, you know, you employ empathy, that'll actually kind of change the way that we engage in those conversations. Unconditional positive regard is a pretty cool just like staple of counseling that, you know, when we are working with people and students, we want to always just make sure that people feel accepted for who they are. It doesn't mean we have to agree with everything, but that like, hey, I like you and I care about you is like what we're always trying to communicate first and foremost. So you could ask yourself, like, how can I show or communicate my love and like toward them as secure in this conversation? If you make that one of your goals in, you know, navigating tough conversations, that's gonna help set up the right factors and environment for being able to talk about more difficult things. And like I said, like, you know, even if a disagreement occurs, you can show care and kindness and acceptance of the child. And Jesus really is the perfect example of this. The fact that he would do that for us, even when we were actively against him, the fact that he would choose to lay down his life and like die for us, we can kind of have that same mindset toward our kids also. All right. Okay, I'll give you a couple practical prompts also, especially when it comes to like grief or something. It doesn't all have to be conversations either, especially with kids and really young kids, honestly, probably teenagers too. If you're having trouble engaging just straight up conversations, you can get at these conversations in creative ways. Like, you know, one thing we use a lot when it comes to like grief counseling and stuff was we use a lot of activities or reading books. And that way you're engaging, you can have conversations from there, but it's kind of focused on an activity. And some favorite ones that I'll do are like having students like draw their favorite memories or, you know, create a collage, make a memory box. Those are some good ways to kind of get at the feelings of grief, kind of see what's on their mind. What are some, make sure that they're remembering the loved one in a positive way and honoring them. That kind of meets a lot of the needs of grief. And so you can do that through creative activities. Books are great too. There are a lot of good books out there. A couple ones I wanted to highlight that are really great, especially for younger kids. God Gave Us Heaven is a really sweet book about polar bears that are like talking through all these things. And it's just really nice the way it talks through it. It anticipates the types of questions that kids have and answers them in a really gentle way. And that book also employs some truth from the Bible also, which is sweet. Healing Your Grieving Heart for kids, 100 practical ideas. There's another one for teens. I have an example, the teen one actually is on this back table if anyone wants to look at it, but it's just a bunch of practical ideas. Maybe it's got activities, journaling prompts, all sorts of things that you can do to kind of help move through the grief process. Especially when it comes to grief, I think one of the best answers to grief is being able to learn about heaven. And there's some really good books for that. Heaven for Kids by Randy Alcorn is a staple, I feel like. Someday Heaven is another really good one. I have a Someday Heaven on the back table over there, too, if you want to look at it. But that's good to keep, to place our mind on what's like true, that we have things that we can solidly rely on. So, yes, there's a grief handout from John Montgomery, too, that has more tips and helpful tools for working through grief with kids. There are grief workshops that you can attend for yourself, and there's always more things being developed in that regard. So there's good resources out there. The last thing I put on here that I want to also mention is if you are personally feeling fearful about death, or you know, worry about loved ones who have died, I would highly recommend reading John Burke's books. There's Imagine Heaven and Imagine the God of Heaven. It has blown my mind. I won't talk your ears off about it right now, because I can, and I have to lots of friends. But if you ever want to talk about it, I love talking about it. They're really interesting books. Like, I have learned some pretty cool things that I think it solidifies even further, that solid hope that I have, that's really clear in the Bible. And it's just a cool look into the ways that God interacts with people individually. Well, maybe I can pray for us and we can close down that way. God, I'm just really grateful to have a community where we can talk about tough things, we can come alongside each other, help equip each other. I'm just really grateful for all the people that have been a part of expanding my understanding of difficult things and coming alongside me. And I'm really grateful for the role that you have for adults in helping kids to develop healthy understandings of these things and the ability to dialogue openly about tough things. Thank you for providing a foundation for us to have security, like in your love, and that we can extend that to other people. And yeah, I pray that you just use that mechanism of your love to break down the barriers that, you know, uncertainty and even shame can create in us when we want to engage more meaningfully with people. I pray that you just be with, you know, every parent and adult here working with kids to be able to figure out the specifics of their circumstances and how to apply your truth to it. Amen.
Thanks for listening. This has been a Dwell Community Church production.